Hello and welcome to Dealcast, the voice of Merger Market, the world's leading publication about mergers and acquisitions. I'm Juliana Needham, a journalist who's been covering M&A for a decade. Now, it's one of the most important private equity events in Asia. The AVCJ Forum took place in Hong Kong at the end of November. The AVCJ, or Asian Venture Capital Journal, is a sister publication of Merger Market. Key figures and major investors from the region's private equity and venture capital groups were at the forum. So what did they have to say? What are the big trends that have emerged during 2025? And which countries will investors focus on in 2026? To find out more, I spoke to Justin Neisner, who is the associate editor of the AVCJ and was at the event. Hi, Justin. Welcome. Thanks for joining me.
Hi.
So to begin with, could you explain a bit about AVCJ, about the publication and then the forum that took place recently?
Yeah, AVCJ. Well, I mean, before becoming part of Merger Market, AVCJ, it's Asian Venture Capital Journal is what it is. And it's just that. It's a venture capital journal, trade journal for the industry. That was started in 1987. It covers everything in private equity from venture capital startups all the way to like the biggest buyouts that there can be, billion-dollar deals, and all the services industries that kind of support that whole industry of investment. It's long since taken up the conference businesses. We do conferences around the region, all the major markets anyway. The big annual show is the AVCJ Forum in Hong Kong. That's every year in November. It's a four-day event. There's an awards ceremony that goes with that. We give out about 15 awards that are for different categories like deal of the year, large cap deal of the year, and fundraising and different kinds of categories like that. It's a major event. We had 1,600 registered attendees this year. Out of 1,600 registered, 1,350 came in person. So that's like a more than 80% show up rate, which, you know, in the conference businesses, these are really good numbers. And it's all about Asia. It's people coming to talk about investment in Asia, but it's not just people in Asia. People are coming in from North America and Europe, especially, but also, interestingly, people are coming in from the Middle East more. This time of year, fourth quarter, a lot of people converge on Asia for various reasons, and they come to Hong Kong. There's a lot of that activity, and we're part of that. You know, it's a fixture of industry calendars, really. As far as I can tell, this was like our biggest year yet, just in terms of attendees. So I think it really kind of shows, you know, it gives a sense of the confidence in the industry.
Okay. And what was the mood like at the forum? Was it optimistic? What were the kind of key takeaways?
Yeah, well, I mean, so the interesting thing is, like, you get hundreds of people from the same industry in the same place like that. And I think the real mood really shines through. I mean, obviously, during the year, I talk to all kinds of people across the industry in these individual encounters, and you can get some anecdotal feedback from that and you can kind of take the temperature of the industry that way. But I don't think it's as accurate as getting hundreds of people in the room at the same time. I think you get a really honest impression from the atmosphere that you get from that. It was really confident. I was surprised by how confident it was. Look, AVCJ, we compile data. We've got a whole analytics data kind of part to our business. We were running data slides throughout the conference. We put up these data on a big graphic on the screen, and it goes before the panels and after the panels, and everything is going down. You know, I mean, it's like overall deal volume is almost a 10-year low. We've seen a sharp drop off in buyouts. Exits are down. I mean, exits, in other words, like just selling businesses. Private equity firms invest in the business, they hold it for a while, and they can't sell it. So those numbers are weak. Likewise, holding period numbers were weak. In private equity, you're supposed to hold it for 5 years or so before you sell it. It was 5 years in 2020, and now people are holding companies for 7 years. It's hard to get agreement on price. It's hard to sell companies. And so, this is the post-pandemic disruption environment. There's a lot of, you know, gloomy statistics and a lot of arrows pointing down. Layer on top of that, geopolitical difficulties. And, you know, the first half of this year, there was all the tariff disruption. And then you can layer on top of that, uncertainty around AI. People, you know, don't know what's going to happen with industries as AI comes into it.
So, Justin, you said that optimism was high. Could you run through in a bit more detail what investors are optimistic about?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting. In Asia, I mean, just in terms of deal sourcing and at the deal level, the mechanics of it, I mean, I think a lot of people consider Asia to be a less intermediated market. In other words, you know, there's more opportunities to get proprietary deals. There's more ways that you can kind of negotiate bilateral deals that aren't a part of a big auction. And so you can get good prices on companies that are in a growth market. And those are dynamics that, you know, people are attracted to in Asia. And you know, they like the fundamentals in general, the Asia, the reason for investing in Asia. You get the diversification, but you also get the rise of the middle classes. You've got the rapid digitalization, urbanization, and all of these things over time, you know, with an investment, if you pick the right company in the right sector, these compound over time. There's the diversification factor as well. I mean, a lot of global investors have been kind of pulling away from the U.S. They've kind of decided that they're overexposed to the U.S. There's been a lot of uncertainty in the policy environment in the U.S. And so Europe and Asia are benefiting from that. I think one of the most interesting comments from that I heard on this topic from the forum was Gaurav Trahan. That's the co-head of KKR Asia. KKR, of course, is like one of the first private equity firms. It's from the 1970s, and it's a global organization. They're in every country around the world, every country in Asia, massive organization. And Trahan was saying 50% of their distributions this year came from Asia. So in other words, 50%, like all the returns that they made in 2025, the returns that they distributed back to their underlying investors, the people that invest in their funds, that return, 50% of that whole economic machine is happening in Asia for them. So this is a major firm. So I really feel like that says it all. China specifically, also, there was a lot of confidence around China. Of course, for an Asian conference, you're going to always have your China bulls, but you know, there was a lot. I was surprised from the global investors how much optimism there was about China, because global investors have been so standoffish about China for the last couple of years.
Yeah, caught somewhat in the crosshairs with Donald Trump and trade wars and technology.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I mean, this is like, and so, you know, this again, from Trahan from KKR, he was saying, China, for him, the risk-reward balance for them, it's one of the best in the world, just because the valuations are going down so much. I mean, they recently bought a company, Daiyao Beverages. This is like a $1 billion buyout. And he was saying, if you did this in any other country, it would have been practically twice the price. It's a soda pop company. I mean, it's in some ways, it's a really reliable kind of model consumer business. You're just getting great prices in China. Not everybody agrees. We also heard from Michael Brandmeier. He's the global CIO of Goldman Sachs. Not as convinced about the risk reward in China in the buyout space, but he liked the venture capital. I mean, huge innovation. I think somebody else said that there's like 4 million engineers are coming out of the universities in China every year. So this is massive. I mean, a lot of people speaking very highly about the quality of the venture capital firms, the quality of the entrepreneurs. So yeah, a lot of interest there.
Okay, and some mixed views there on China. It's obviously been quiet compared to other markets for reasons that you've outlined. Where are people putting their money in Asia?
Yeah, that's right. China is down still. I mean, there's optimism about China, but yeah, it is slow. Japan was the hotspot in 2025, and I think people are saying that's going to continue in 2026. It's been leading the region in a lot of key, you know, statistics around fundraising and investment. And you know, what interested me, which I thought was quite kind of, you know, interesting, is that there was, you know, people described it as being a market with a lot of potential, not a market that's peaking, because it's quite a developed market. But I think that speaks to the, you know, corporate transformation that's been happening in China for the last several years, and that's really accelerating. We've got the activist shareholders in China that are kind of pressuring undermanaged companies to tighten up finances and operations, modernize, be more digital. A lot of corporations selling subsidiaries. PE firms can carve out those businesses And interestingly, you know, the motivation for these corporations to sell their businesses is they want to modernize. So they sell the businesses to a private equity firm, and then they buy a software business, and they buy the software business from a local venture capital firm. So I mean, it really kind of serves the private markets across the spectrum. You've got this corporate activity that's benefiting venture capital firms and buyout firms alike.
Okay. And then we've talked about China and Japan. What about India?
Yeah, India is an interesting one. I mean, I always kind of mention it with Japan side by side as kind of like this year, everyone's talking about them as the twin growth markets of the region, really, the largest markets that are the most attractive hotspots. With India, it's really about the exit markets firing on all cylinders. I mean, that was always the sticking point for India. You put your money in, but you can't get it out. Now we've got, you know, really good looking M&A markets. The IPO markets especially are really attracting a lot of people to the region because, you know, finally the private market investors, the private equity firms can get these exits on the public markets. And it's not just getting a company to go public. I mean, once they're already on the stock exchange, there's much healthier trading. We're seeing, you know, after their lockup period expires, private equity firms are able to do these bulk trades where they can offload $500 million worth of shares or $1 billion worth of shares in a company in a single go and get some pretty healthy returns.
Could we just look at some of the themes that cut across the whole region? What are those themes? What's different in the Asia Pacific region versus the rest of the world?
Yeah, well, I mean, the one that springs to mind is ESG. I mean, the first day, it's a 4-day conference, and the first day is completely dedicated to ESG. So that's a major talking point for the industry in general. And I guess the theme that kind of floated to the surface this year is the pushback and the kind of backlash that we're seeing in the political climate, especially from the US. And that does bleed into Asia.
And it does seem to have been a massive sea change. We're seeing it in Europe to a lesser extent, but certainly in the US, there's been a big pullback from ESG.
Yeah. So, I mean, and we've got some numbers on that for Asia, which are quite interesting. AVCJ did a survey with Morrison Forster, the law firm. 75% of the investors in Asia said, look, the declining U.S. sentiment is not really influencing us. And that sounds great, but actually, you know, 25% say they do. That's a significant minority. And we got 25% that are really feeling it and that could probably making changes to what they do based on that. The other interesting thing is that in 2023, they were saying 33% of fund managers were getting questions from their LPs about ESG. So their underlying investors were asking questions. They wanted to know what you're doing with ESG. You know, a third of the LPs were making demands. Now that number is only 18%. Nobody wants to talk about it. You know, they're just kind of staying quiet. So the pushback is kind of, you know, creating that, you know, it's hushing people up. But it's, you know, the worst part is like, I think that's kind of creating a little bit of apathy. AI is a big talking point. Geopolitics is a big talking point, but ESG has kind of become a side topic.
Okay. And so can we round all of that up? What does it all mean for private equity activity in Asia? We've got the new year around the corner. What can we expect to see?
Yeah. So look, private equity firms, I guess, they've always been really good at re-engineering themselves and reinventing themselves, depending on what's going on. And I think that we can expect them to, well, you know, in the near future, I think we can expect to see a lot more specialization, whether that's specializing in a geography or specializing in a sector or industry. That's an established theme in Asia, but I think we will see more of it. Having a specialist edge helps you do operations. And, you know, people always talk about how Asia is slowing down. You know, it used to be no matter what market you were in Asia, you could talk about 8%, 10% growth if you're talking about like the GDP of the national growth. Now those numbers are more like 2%, 5%. So the easy gains are over in Asia and you really got to be an operational expert. And that's easier to do if you've got some specialization, if you're focusing on healthcare or if you focus on AI or what have you, or a consumer, you know, or if you just focus on one market, like all we do is India. A lot of the LPs, the institutional investors at the forum were praising that specialist approach. And for the people that are raising funds, they're going to want to meet that demand and do that. Otherwise, you know, the large cap buyout space is a good way to think about this kind of operational lens. investors in the large cap space, I mean, they do expect that market to grow in Asia, but to exploit that, they're going to need to think bigger and more creative and be more transformational in terms of doing M&A and bolt-on deals overseas, which is difficult to do in the current macro environment, the current kind of geopolitical environment. So it's going to take a lot of, courage and creativity to kind of do those big deals in a deglobalizing world in multiple markets and really aggressively grow them. So, it's possible the mega deals, the most ambitious deals, there could be a slowdown in some of that activity, and that could generate some gloomy headlines in the year to come. But I think, meanwhile, underneath, the bulk of the industry is going to just continue to get more sophisticated, kind of under the radar.
So watch this space. It sounds like there's plenty going on. Justin, good to talk to you. Thanks very much. That was Justin Neisner, who is the associate editor of the AVCJ. Thanks to Justin, and thank you to you for listening to this week's episode of Dealcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. If you've enjoyed listening, please subscribe. And if you're on an app that supports it, please give us a rating and review. To find out more about what we've been talking about in this episode and more about Merger Market and AVCJ, have a look at our show notes. Do join us again next time.